The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
First, we'd love to get your reaction, sir, to what's going on in the financial markets today.
Well, I mean, it's to be expected. This is a patient that was very sick. We really inherited a terrible economy, as you know, with a lot of problems, including loss of manufacturing and plants closed up all over the country. You know, we've lost 90,000 plants since NAFTA, if you think of that. 90,000, it's not even believable. And about 6 million jobs. And so it was a sick patient. It went through an operation on Liberation Day. And it's gonna be a booming country, a very booming country. It's gonna be amazing, actually. And we see it because we have trillions of dollars committed to come in, trillions. The operation's over, and now we let it settle in. You see the plants are starting to construction already. We have many plants. Indiana, massive auto plant, Honda. And we have so many plants, and they'll be under construction. And as they start to build, you're going to see a lot of construction jobs, and you're going to see a lot of jobs when they open.
In these other countries, you have to understand, it's not just their tariffs. Their tariffs are the tip of the iceberg. It's the non-tariff trade barriers. It's the subsidies. It's the manipulation. It's the rebates. It's all sorts of things. They don't let us bring our beef in. They don't let us bring our corn in. You got to realize it's a tip of an iceberg. The water below the water, they just won't let us trade.
I think the most important thing for all affected countries is now to cooperate and to coordinate their actions against the United States.
Responding in kind to these tariffs, as China is now doing, the European Union is apparently planning to do the same. In that opinion, is that the right strategy?
I think so, yes. Trump has escalated this trade war, and he has begun to impose tariffs. And now it is important also to create some damage for the U.S. economy immediately.
We're looking to the European Union to be closer, and we're looking to partners in Asia.
And this is my next question, mm-hmm. because given that the Trump administration basically seems to be betting on the concept that they're the only game in town and that mm-hmm. they will be able to get their way on all these things, this is what we've heard from the cabinet, this is what we've heard from Donald Trump. Does this sort of change your concept of how the relationship with the EU needs to be, and even the G7? Do we need to start thinking, from your perspective, of a G7 minus one?
Trade between nations, of course, is based on trust. How much reputational damage could these tariffs do to the U.S. in the world?
I think it's massive. I mean, it was well flagged. I mean, Trump has been saying this for a while, that something like this was coming down the pipeline, but it still came as a shock. And I think that it's done massive reputational damage. I think the people in longer term, even if there's a change of administration in the U.S., you're going to see people, no one's going to do long-term deals anymore with the U.S. because they fear another change in administration could upend everything again. So I think we're going to see a complete rebalancing of trade in the world.
As the world turns, as we've been saying all along, it's a world in realignment, and you're really seeing the spirit of get and competition on display. It's not like it wasn't there in the decades leading up to all of these tariffs being announced the other day. I mean, there was so much selfishness. Every country getting what they could from the United States. The United States getting all the cheap goods from China. And now, like I said earlier this week, I mean, the party's over. And you see it openly. It's every man, or in this case, every nation for itself. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at trumpetdaily.com or at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/trumpetdaily. The email address, if you'd care to submit some feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. Mike.com. So we've talked about the spirit in the air, the spirit of murder, the spirit of hatred. What about the spirit of competition? You know, many, many years ago, Herbert Armstrong used to talk about, he'd boil it down to the very simple terms of give versus get. And when he was traveling the world, meeting with all of these foreign ministers, diplomats, prime ministers, presidents, royalty, when he was meeting with them, he was talking about the way of give, the way of God's love, and how that this world was headed for disaster because every nation is out for themselves. Every individual is out for themselves. There's an article from A Plain Truth back in the early 80s. It's talking about man's way of life. It says here, in rejecting the revealed knowledge of God, man has had no alternative but to rely on his own humanly devised approaches to life that appear right to him. You can listen to, I mean, we have a team that works to assemble the material for this program, and there's people from all over the world. I think we must have 4, 5, 6 countries represented. And then you see from some of the clips that we play, whether it's a Trump official or a European official, and here there are ideas, agendas that are totally opposite from one another, and yet, you know, from that individual's perspective or from that nation's perspective, it seems totally right. It seems like the right thing to do. You know, I took you through some of the history of tariffs and you don't have to go back very far to see how that the United States relied almost solely on tariffs for income. So it's not like this has never happened. But for 40, 50 years, with low tariffs, free trade, as far as countries abroad viewed it, and then, of course, all the cheap goods just pouring into the United States. I mean, everybody was getting something. Now we're seeing a world that's very, very much on the verge of an explosion. This article says, that's why the world is beset with so many differing opinions of what is right on controversial issues. Everybody's got a different opinion. Where's this leading? It quotes Proverbs 14 and verse 12. It's a memory verse that we have here at the college. There is a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. It might seem right. It might seem like the right thing to do. Donald Trump has compared it to, you know, coming out of surgery, and you're kind of a little loopy and you're sore and you're recovering, but in his mind, there's going to be a full recovery and everything's going to be okay. We'll weather this storm with the stock markets plummeting and that sort of thing. There's other nations saying, no, this is a crisis. We need to do something that hurts America. We need to do something that damages America. And we can do it. We can pull this off if we band together. Where is this leading? Well, think about Proverbs 14 and verse 12 as we go forward. I got an email from someone, and they've watched the show for quite some time, and he said he voted for Trump, and he thought that Trump would make everything better, but as he's watched the show these past few months, he sees that really the only perspective that matters here, now we have talked about the temporary resurgence, there could be some short-term gain for this Trump agenda. But as he said in his email, this viewer, the only perspective that matters is God's perspective. What does God say? What does God think? This morning in class, we went through Hebrews 11, the faith chapter, and just talking about the difference between living faith, Christ in you faith, and the shallow, meaningless faith that's talked about in the world of traditional Christianity. Just a simple belief in Christ. You know, just wear the cross or talk about Jesus and you're good to go. You're a true Christian. You don't really have to do anything. Christ did it all for you. Well, try telling that to all those people mentioned in Hebrews 11. I mean, they sacrificed their lives. They laid down their lives as a living sacrifice. These were men and women of action. These were action-oriented Christians. And in some cases, they were, as it says in that chapter, sawn asunder. They were martyrs. Others waited for decades for God to fulfill a promise. Hebrews 11:13 says that they died without receiving the promises. They died in faith, in other words. They looked to a new city, New Jerusalem. They looked to a spiritual city. These are the towering figures of the Bible. They didn't have just a shallow belief in God and then carried on. God told Abraham, look, I want you to leave your hometown, everything that you know, and go to a strange place. And Abraham said, yes, sir, I'll do it. He went out not knowing where to go. God said, I want you to sacrifice your son, the son of promise, the promised seed. And Abraham said, yes, sir, I'll do it. And Hebrews 11 says Abraham went forward doing that, knowing that, well, if he had to follow through and sacrifice his son, God would surely raise him back to life. There had never even been a resurrection from the dead to that point. I mean, that's some kind of faith. That's some kind of belief. Faith mixed with works, righteous works. Instead, what you get today in the world of religion is just a lot of shallow talk with no doing whatsoever, no righteous action. Living faith is Christ in you. You're inviting the life of Christ, the living Christ, into your mind, like it says in Philippians 2:5. And so Christ comes in and he lives his life in you the way that he did 2,000 years ago. That's what a true Christian is, a follower of Christ. This world doesn't have that. This world is, you see it, as I say, so clearly. The spirit of competition, the spirit of get what you can for yourself. Guess who started that? That would be Satan the devil. Here he was, trained at the throne of God, and then given an opportunity to carry out God's purpose and plan on this earth. And instead, what did he do? Well, he opposed God. He went his own way, the way that he thought was right. And he deceived a third of the angels along the way, and they became demons, and Lucifer became Satan. They are opposed to God when they should be supporting him, carrying out God's will. That's what Jesus did when he came in the flesh. He only had a short time on this earth, and he just submitted his will to God's will, whatever God wants. And these two, I mean, the love, the cooperation, the service-oriented attitude that both of them have, God the Father and Christ the Son, they're reproducing that in their family. And those of us in God's church are being taught the way of give, the spirit of give, the spirit of service. That's what Jesus taught the disciples in Matthew 20 when they were bickering. And then they did it again in Matthew 26. They were bickering over who was going to have the higher position in the kingdom. And Christ said, look, let me tell you something about true Christian leadership. It's the way of service. It's the way of sacrifice. Servant leadership. Again, you listen to the commentary and, you know, if you're of that nation or of that group, it sounds pretty good. But what is God's perspective? Here's President Trump again. I think this might have been on the Air Force One, clip two.
What we have is we have a set of tariffs based on what they've been charging us that's reciprocal. And those tariffs have come in and every country's called us. That's the beauty of what we do. We put ourselves in the driver's seat. If we would have asked some of these countries, almost most of these countries, to do us a favor, they would have said, know now they'll do anything for us. But we have tariffs, they've been set, and it's going to make our country very rich.
Are you open to deals with these countries if they're calling you?
Well, it depends. If somebody said that we're going to give you something that's so phenomenal, as long as they're giving us something that's good. For instance, with TikTok as an example, we have a situation with TikTok where China will probably say, we'll approve a deal, but will you do something on the tariff? The tariffs give us great power to negotiate.
And you listen to that as an American and you say, well, about time. It's about time. We've been getting ripped off. But just consider the statement. And again, it's hard to fault him. Just looking at it at, from an American perspective, he's saying, if we would have asked these other nations for a favor, they would have said, no, can't do it. Not going to do it. But now that we've lowered the boom, now that we've had Liberation Day, now that we've announced all the tariffs, that puts us it puts us in a much better position to get what we want from these other nations. And then what are the other nations thinking? Hey, we got to band together and hurt the United States and help ourselves. There's a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Sean Davis at The Federalist. America has become addicted to cheap foreign baubles and easy money at the expense of its long-term economic health. Something had to be done. In his view, we've got to make tariffs great again. It says, we allowed ourselves to be transformed from a cast iron economy that made things into a largely paper economy that depends on the good graces of foreign nations for its survival. This is a recipe for civilizational suicide. He's right. You can't sustain a paper economy. Certainly not one that's drowning in $36 trillion of debt. As I said yesterday, you can try to put a Band-Aid on some things now, but you can't roll back $36 trillion. As I mentioned, I mean, what if Trump decided to run against Bill Clinton in 1992? How different would the course of America have been if that, and how much more could the healing have corrected when you're looking at a deficit or a federal debt of, what was it back then? A couple trillion, 3 trillion, certainly not 36 trillion. And yet the timing, God's timing is perfect. It's perfect. He's always on time. God brought him in 2016 to save America from being blotted out by an Antiochus administration that wanted to fundamentally transform America. And there's some positive things happening. And there's some pretty dramatic changes happening. But look at the bigger picture and see the world in trouble. In trouble. We're all going the way that we think is right. And how does that work out for mankind? How's it worked out historically? There's a way that seems so right, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Sean Davis says, we don't make our own weapons, food, machines, vehicles, plastics, medicines, or computers. The whole COVID insanity with its shutdowns and shortages and supply chain chaos was a blaring alarm warning warning us that the economy we thought was so strong was shockingly fragile. It's true. Look, we were relying on, you know, things from China to help us fight a disease started in China, as I said yesterday. Imagine a prosperous farmer now surrounded by enemies and competitors who over time outsourced most farming activities to his neighbors because they could do the work and provide the materials more cheaply than he could. He sold off his equipment and laid off his farmhands because it was just easier and less expensive for others to do the work and maintain the machinery. We'll just print the money and buy everything. because it's all going to be so cheap. One day, his neighbor said no more. And now he finds himself unable to fertilize his land, plow his fields, or harvest his crops. Even if he had kept his old tractors and implements, he sold off all his welding equipment and spare parts and raw materials, so repairing anything would be impossible. On top of that, he doesn't remember all that much about repairing the equipment anyway, because he hasn't done it in years. America has been hollowed out. And how much of that gets rebuilt? I went through that article yesterday about just how difficult the process is going to be to rebuild the infrastructure, to become familiar again with the method of farming, to use the analogy Sean Davis uses. It's not going to happen overnight. And so as America works on this front, you've got other nations like Germany working on the military front, because America poses a grave threat to Germany. 74% of Germans believe that. There's a way that seems right to man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. It sounds good. You know, Jesse Waters saying, hey, we're not in high school here. This is nation against nation. We don't need any friends. And he said yesterday, Trump's not concerned about the world economy. He's concerned about the American economy. Well, I mean, as an American, sounds pretty good. But is that going to solve the problems of this world, that thinking, that mindset? The spirit of competition, it is in the air. It is alive and well. It is worse today than it's ever been. That's 2 Timothy 3. Evil men and seducers wax worse and worse in these last days that are dangerous days. Paul said so. Jesus said so in the Olivet prophecy. When they talk about Jesus, just know that religious deception has led to so much suffering in this world. Listen to Jesse Waters from last night, clip 10.
And Trump's not worried about the world economy. He's worried about the American one. Donald Trump isn't the president of the New York Stock Exchange. He's the president of the United States of America and is looking at the future of the country 10, 20, 30, 50 years from now, not just earnings the next quarter. America used to have no income tax. We raised all revenue from tariffs. And that made us an industrial powerhouse that won us two world wars. Protecting the working man used to be what both parties did. Here's Nancy from 96. She sounded like Trump in a pantsuit.
In terms of jobs, this is the biggest and cruelest hoax of all. Not only do we not have market access, not only do they have prohibitive tariffs, not only are our exports not let in very specifically, but China benefits with at least 10 million jobs from U.S.-China trade.
Jesse said there, protecting the working man used to be what both parties did. And then he exposes these hypocrites, these double dealers. They've been transformed. You talk about a fundamental transformation. But just coming back to protecting the working man, listen to this from Mr. Armstrong. I don't have the exact year, but probably back in the 70s or 80s. But he says, do not misunderstand me. I'm completely in favor of what is best in the interest of the American worker. I think Richard Palmer might have gone through this on Trumpet World, if you want to get to that later today. But Mr. Armstrong says, but I want my readers to stop and think, because our fellow American workmen are not working in their own best interests. Look where these trends are leading. When American workers are trying to get all they can get, and at the same time giving as little as they can get away with, even to giving nothing, and Japanese and German workers, in their national interest, are working for half the wages or less, and working with fervor of loyalty and patriotism, it means we are headed one of two ways. Either we start raising high tariff barriers against other countries, starting a trade war, which in time will trigger the nuclear war that will destroy us, or American workers are going to have to meet the competition of the workers in other countries by lowering living standards. Obviously, American workers are not going to choose to do the latter. He's basically saying you can either live by the way of give or live by the way of get. And of course, man, since the Garden of Eden, chose the latter. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil, it's the tree that seems like the way to go. It seems right to partake of that tree. God offered Adam and Eve the tree of life. He offered them the Holy Spirit. He offered them the spirit of love. And they rejected it through their rebellion. It says, and if they don't, well, the handwriting is on our national wall. The handwriting is indeed on the wall. As I say, what we've seen in these last couple of months, it's like ripping the scab off of a flesh wound. And you're seeing the grotesque cancer on the inside. You're seeing the spirit of competition everywhere. And now it's like a free-for-all. And nations right now are concluding that if we don't align our forces together against the United States, we're not going to survive. Canada's economy's lost 33,000 jobs in March, just last month. This is the Financial Post talking about the rising unemployment there. Economists polled by Reuters had expected a gain of 10,000 jobs in the month. Nearly 1.5 million people were unemployed in March, up 36,000 during the month and up 167,000 compared to the year before. It's not going in the right direction for Canada. You can see why they're so upset. America comes along and makes it worse. It's America's fault. This one from Better Dwelling, at least another 200,000 jobs may soon disappear. Canada's economy is making progress, but the average worker is in a rut. A new report from the National Bank of Canada explains to investors that the economy is doing much better than most anticipated. Unfortunately, that's going to be short-lived as economic anxiety takes control of households. Consequently, they see up to 190,000 jobs lost within the next few months. This is just Canada, America's neighbor. This is an article from the same publication talking about China's response to the Trump tariffs and how that this is going to have an adverse effect on Canada as well. There's a ripple effect in all these actions. Canada's trade war with the world's largest economy is a serious threat to its stability. In fact, it's such an economic threat that almost no one is paying attention to another significant one, the trade war with the world's second largest economy, China. I mean, all these nations, just like Mr. Armstrong said in that article, erecting these trade barriers. Each nation selfishly going after what they think is rightfully theirs. The spirit of competition, the spirit of get, it is in the air and it is strong. We touched on it yesterday, but there's a good chance that in the short term here, these Trump tariffs could really hurt Germany and Europe. This is from the Telegraph. Germany heading back to the 1930s. It's set to be one of the EU countries hit the hardest by Donald Trump's tariff surge. Germany is heading back to the 1930s, a top economist warned on Thursday in response to the U.S. tariff surge. Germany's upset. Germany's angry. Germany sees Trump as a threat on par with Putin. He's a danger to their security. Where does this end? Well, again, what does Proverbs 14 and verse 12 say? There's a way that seems right. Further on in this piece, the 1930s are back. said Kasten Brzezinski, comparing the wave of trade barriers imposed by the White House to the 1930s era protectionist trade rules. And then what happened in 1939, 1940? Well, just look into the history books. But be careful when you talk about it, because with respect to Germany, like I said yesterday, I mean, you can't talk about them wanting to rebuild a global military power. You cannot talk about Germany rebuilding an empire in Europe. It's forbidden. Verboten. I think that's German. You can't do it. You cannot do it. Play this from Ursula von der Leyen. She's heading up the EU at the moment. Clip 9.
So it is a privilege to be here for the first summit between Central Asia and the European Union, marking a new chapter in our long-standing friendship. And as we meet here today, we are at another turning point. New global barriers arise. Investments are being redirected or cut. Powers around the world are carving out new spheres of influence. But here in Central Asia, we show that there is another way. And this partnership shows you can rely on the European Union.
You can rely on the EU. There are some nations, hint, hint, that would be headed up by the bad orange man, that you just can't rely on. You can't trust them. We've talked this week about how, well, Richard Palmer wrote it at thetrumpet.com. These nations in Asia or wherever that hate each other, and now they're coming together. They're negotiating trade policy because of what the U.S. is doing. Everyone's doing what seems right. Von der Leyen's with the Central Asian countries. That's Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. Lots of stans or stan. All these Central Asian countries. And she's there saying, look, you can trust the EU, quite unlike the United States. You can trust us. We need to come together. Listen to CNN on China retaliating to the Trump tariffs. Clip 3.
China is now hitting back, retaliating against the Trump tariffs, announcing this morning it is now slapping a reciprocal 34% tariff on all U.S. goods.
Look, that is why we're seeing more mayhem in financial markets around the world. Markets are going boom, but they're going boom down. Look at this. Dow futures off by almost 3%. This signals another 1,200-point loss at the opening bell. That's on top of yesterday's 1,700-point loss. Steeper losses for the NASDAQ futures down 3%. So what happened was futures were down a bit, yeah. And then China retaliated. They came back and they say they're putting a 34% tariff on goods that are made in the United States. It's not shocking to see China fire back.
Right.
But this is an escalation that investors, of course, did not want to see.
An escalation based on the spirit of competition. CNBC, Trump will buckle under pressure if Europe bands together over tariffs. This is according to the German economy minister. If Europe bands together, quotes this guy saying, this is what I see, that Donald Trump will buckle under pressure, that he corrects his announcements under pressure. But the logical consequence is that he then also needs to feel the pressure. He's got to feel it. We've got to make it hurt for America, just like Doug Ford said not that long ago. We've got to inflict pain on our competitors. We're competing with them. Trump raises the tariff on China. China answers in kind. And this pressure now needs to be unfolded from Germany, from Europe, in the alliance with other countries, and then we will see who is the stronger one in this arm wrestle. I mean, statements like this, you heard Donald Trump saying, yep, now that we could have gone to our neighbors and said, hey, can you help us out? They wouldn't have helped us. None of them would have helped us. Now they're going to line up to help us because we're making it hurt for them. Then you hear this guy. The only way that we're going to be able to come out on top is if we demonstrate we're stronger. People all over the world are saying things like this. Like I say, we're getting an insight into just how strong the spirit of competition is in Satan's world. And that's the thing, the devil's behind it. He's the prince of the power of the air. And now more than ever, I mean, we need God's perspective. We need our minds on the kingdom. As I was saying in class this morning, I mean, what an incredible example of faith in Abraham. Searching for a city whose builder and maker is God? That's New Jerusalem. So here's this man of faith, the father of the faithful, the scriptures call him. And he was on this earth 4,000 years ago. And you bring him forward to this time, he was looking beyond our day. He was looking beyond the millennium, the thousand-year reign of Christ. He was looking beyond the great white throne judgment all the way to New Jerusalem. It's described in Revelation 21. Do you believe it? Do you believe that a spiritual city is going to descend from heaven and be positioned on this round earth as the universe headquarters for God's family? You say that to some people in this world. You say that to a lot of people in this world, even religious people. They'll laugh at you. What are you talking about? How crazy is this? There is a real spirit world. We're seeing the spirit of the devil in this last time of Satan's age, right here on this earth. And we're about to see God's spirit and the spirit of love and outflowing concern for the good and welfare of others. That's going to spread over all the earth, starting in the wonderful world tomorrow. Jesus, when the disciples came to him in Matthew 24 and said, "Show us a sign." My Father's made the point. I've made it multiple times already in the last couple weeks. But Jesus tried to help them get their minds on the coming kingdom. That's what we need now, more than ever. When we come back, we have this week's installment of World Watch, and then looks like about 15 minutes left for the rest of the show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Prosperity, government, trade, technology, stability, freedom. The last two centuries have been the exception in human history. How did we get here? The 19th century was dominated by an empire that exported civility, order, standards, and opened the doors for global trade. It ended slavery and implemented a system of governance that protected people's rights. And then in the 20th century, a new power came to dominate. Remarkably, one that would continue in the same traditions as its predecessor. For 200 years, the United States and Britain dominated the world stage. How did these two nations rise to prominence so suddenly? And why are their legacies so relentlessly attacked today? The astonishing truth is that your Bible prophesied the rise of Britain and the United States. It also prophesied their fall. The biblical identity of these two nations is the vital key that unlocks Bible prophecy. This lost master key to prophecy is revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's most requested book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You must understand the biblical identities of these two nations to comprehend where we are in Bible prophecy today. To learn more about this vital truth, request your free copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
North Korea sent around 3,000 more soldiers to Russia during January and February to continue support for Russian President Vladimir Putin's war on Ukraine. The Associated Press reported on March 27th, based on a report from South Korea's military intelligence. The additional troops are intended to offset losses incurred in the war. North Korea has already supplied Russia with at least 11,000 troops for its war on Ukraine. It has also provided ammunition, including howitzers, suicide drones, and millions of artillery shells. North Korea has helped Russia maintain its military capabilities throughout this war. In return, Russia supplies North Korea with cash, oil, and weapons technology, including space technology. The Bible prophesies an alliance of several Asian nations headed by a Russian superpower, which will play a central role in a coming worldwide war. To learn more, read North Korean troops fight alongside Russians against Ukraine. At least 3,000 people died when a 7.7 magnitude earthquake struck central Myanmar on March 28th. Estimates suggest the final death toll could exceed 10,000. Regions in nearby China and Thailand also felt the quake. Myanmar is in a civil war, but the country's resistance movement announced a partial ceasefire in affected areas. Aftershocks and damaged infrastructure limited rescue efforts after bridges collapsed and some roads and rail lines broke apart. Power, phone, and internet lines were also damaged, hindering communication networks. Bible prophecy warns of increasing earthquakes in the lead-up to Jesus Christ's second coming. As so-called natural disasters increase, many question why God allows crises like these to occur. To learn the answer to this important question, read our free booklet, Why Natural Disasters. China, Japan, and South Korea agreed to closely cooperate for a comprehensive and high-level agreement concerning regional and global trade, according to a statement released after the three nations' trade ministers met on March 30th. On March 22nd, the three nations' top diplomats met for the first time since 2023. China is a longtime enemy of South Korea and Japan, which are both American allies. However, U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs seem to be turning his Asian allies toward Beijing. President Trump's recent 25% tariff on foreign vehicles may especially hurt South Korea and Japan, which supply the second and third most auto imports to the U.S. China, Japan, and South Korea are now more willing to cooperate in the vital semiconductor trade, with Japan and South Korea seeking to import Chinese raw materials, and China looking to buy chips from its historic enemies. The Bible prophesies that China will soon play a leading role in a major military alliance between Asian nations against the U.S. Because of these prophecies, the trumpet has watched for former Chinese enemies like Japan and South Korea to lay aside their differences and join forces with China. To learn more, read Russia and China in Prophecy. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
What's wrong with Elon Musk?
Yeah, well, first of all, he came here as an illegal alien. Documented immigrants, first of all. Second of all, he's a fascist with Nazi salutes.
He's a fascist because he is blatantly trying to disrupt, dismantle democracy in the U.S.
Are you concerned about waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal government?
Not particularly.
But have you been on the Doge website to look at some of the waste, fraud, and abuse that they're trying to cut out?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't believe anything they would put out.
Not the brightest, but not surprising. The real resistance took place in driveways. One California man woke up and his Cybertruck smashed and slashed.
I'm totally shocked. Like you said, this is a really quiet, safe neighborhood. I'm at the top of the hill at the end of a cul-de-sac. We don't get very much traffic up here at all. They had come an hour before that, kind of staked the place out, cover over my cameras and do their little damage show. I'm a little shooken up right now, and I'm concerned that they may possibly come back, and it's not a good feeling having a family, my family here, my young son, and very unsettling.
They said Trump brown shirts were going to go door to door terrorizing people, but it's radicals with Musk derangement syndrome. And it's a diverse crew. Even illegals are getting in on it.
And he goes on and gives another example of just the derangement on display every day, even among older people in the United States. But the young ones are leading the charge as far as the protesting goes, the violent protests. We've seen it with respect to Hamas. We saw it in the Summer of Love. The troops are being prepared for more of it, even as we speak. Yesterday, I went through that article in the Wall Street Journal about just how hard it's going to be. And you do see some of these somewhat negative takes on rebuilding the American infrastructure and the manufacturing base. But in that article, it says, once the factories are built, they will need new skilled workers. I mean, we need people as well. I mean, that's a pretty valuable resource. But then look at people. Jesse said, I mean, that segment was from a few days ago, but Jesse said on another show, the world is changing. And the implication is, as long as Trump's at the helm for America, it's changing for the better. But is it? Are we improving? Are we growing? Jesus, you know, talking about what Christ wanted to have the disciples thinking on in those last days before the crucifixion, the kingdom of God, the future. He also talked a lot about growing and producing and overcoming and enduring to the end. I don't think a lot of our young people are getting that message today in high school or college, the university level. They're certainly being taught the spirit of competition, the spirit of get. There's a strong anti-Americanism strain on the university campus as well. Look at these adults on the street that the guy was talking to. Are you concerned about waste, fraud, and abuse? No, no. Musk is a Nazi. That's what I'm concerned about. Musk is an illegal alien. Now they're concerned about illegal aliens. Just Musk, not the others. Musk isn't even illegal. These people take to the streets, and the moment they start talking, you see just how uneducated they are. Listen to this from one of the commentators. I think it's on MSNBC. Here again, this is one of the adults, one of the educators, clip 7.
South Africa got over apartheid. Did they just go back to their Afrikaner racist constitution and be like, oh, we just need a couple of amendments. We just need a couple of changes here to make it work. No, they threw the whole thing out and started again, this time asking everybody. Wow. This time having a completely new delegation of all of the people of South Africa, not just the white folks, but not no white folks. Mm-hmm. And they came up with a new constitution. It's one of the reasons why the South African constitution is generally thought of as one of the best constitutions in the world. And ours continues to be a piece of crap.
There's an American trashing his own constitution. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg that also raved about the South African constitution. Said it was better than ours. She was on the Supreme Court. This man's a regular commentator on TV. These are the educators. How much better is America today? How much better is the American campus today than it was, say, 100 years ago? This is from a website called Persuasion. Students are not what they used to be. The crisis is worse than you think. It's worse. I've read some pretty good term papers over the years about the state of the college campus today. The cheating, the stealing, the lying, the promiscuity. This one here says most of our students are functionally illiterate. This is not a joke. By functionally illiterate, I mean unable to read and comprehend adult novels. They struggle with reading comprehension. Students are not absolutely illiterate in the sense of being unable to sound out any words whatsoever. Reading bores them, though. They're impatient to get through whatever burden of reading they have to and to move their eyes over the words just to get it done. They're like me clicking through a mandatory online HR training. And then it says further on, reading anything more than a menu is a chore and to be avoided. They also lie about it. I wrote the textbook for a course I regularly teach. It's a fairly popular textbook, so I'm assuming it's not terribly written. I did everything I could to make the writing lively and packed with my most engaging examples. The majority of students don't read it. Oh, they'll come to my office hours occasionally because they're bombing the course and they tell me that they have been doing the reading, but it's obvious they are lying. It's obvious they're not doing the work. It says the most charitable interpretation is that they looked at some of the words, didn't understand anything, pretended that counted as reading, and returned to looking at TikTok. Their writing skills are eighth grade level. He goes on and talks about how now with artificial intelligence, it's just opening the way for more cheating. It's all over the place. Things have changed. Ted Goya describes modern students as checked out, phone addicted zombies. Troy Jollimore writes, I once believed my students and I were in this together, engaged in shared intellectual pursuit. That faith has been obliterated over the past few semesters. Faculty have seen a stunning level of disconnection. Here again, this is the future generation. These are the factory workers of tomorrow. Assuming America builds this massive manufacturing base. The world is changing. It certainly is. And here's an example of some changes that are just terrible. It's the phones, stupid. They're absolutely addicted to their phones. When I go to work out at the campus rec center, easily half the students there are just sitting on the machines scrolling on their phones. They go there, presumably to exercise, and they're just there scrolling away. It says here, all this might sound like an angry rant. I'm not angry. I'm just sad. One thing all faculty have to learn is that students are not us. We can't expect them all to burn with the sacred fire we have for our disciplines, to see philosophy, psychology, math, physics, sociology, or economics as the divine light of reason in a world of shadow. Our job is to kindle that flame, and we're trying to get that spark to catch, but it's getting harder and harder, and we don't know what to do. We just don't know what to do. We don't know how to turn this around. How are we going to get our young people just excited about the basics of education? We're not even talking here about true education, you know, a God-centered education, like the young people receive here at God's College. Just the basics, though. Not interested. It's the phone, stupid. It's the addiction to phones and gadgets. Mr. Armstrong, in his autobiography, he talked about where education comes from. And he said his Uncle Frank talked about how that it's not something you're going to get at a school or an institution. You've got to be motivated yourself to put in the work. He said education comes from study, from books, from lectures, from contacts, from travel, from thinking about what you see, hear, and read, and from experience. Says the reason we have to maintain schools and universities is simply that most people are too lazy. I mean, that was written probably back in the 1960s. I mean, you have to go off to school because you're too lazy to do it for yourself. But then look at the state of schools or higher education today as compared to 50, 60 years ago. Yes, the world is changing, but not for the better, which is why we need to set our minds on a new world, just like Abraham did. And we need to see it. It's described there in Revelation 21. God wants us to fix that firmly in our minds, to be forward-thinking, to be prepared and ready for the second coming of Christ and the establishment of God's kingdom on this earth. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next time.